Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to this afternoon's study session from May City Council for Monday, July 1st, 2013. And the first, we're going to actually do review two agendas this evening before we go on. So we'll review the agenda for tonight and for next Monday night's regular council meeting. Page two. Items 2A and 3A. Items 3B and 3C. Items 3D and 3E. Items 3F and 3G. Items 3H through 4D. Items 4E through 4I. Vice Mayor?
If we could take off 4I, please, off consent.
4I is off consent. Items 5A and 6A. Debbie, Ms. Mayor?
Mayor and Council, 6A is going to be continued until next week, so the 8th, because of an agenda issue.
6A?
Yes.
Is 5A, Mr. Wesley, I know this is introduction.
Yes.
Do we want to, that's on consent. Are we expecting, well, I know you're supportive.
No.
Are we expecting anyone to pull it off? Are we going to go through the full presentation on it?
Mayor, we've been getting emails in support. We're not expecting anybody here in opposition this evening.
Okay.
Overwhelmingly supportive.
I do have some questions on some specifics on that. Don't know if I want to bring them up now or bring them up later, but driveway lengths.
Right. Mayor, you did mention that this morning.
Architecture.
And if we want to make any adjustments to the stipulations, today would be the time to do that.
Okay.
So they're part of the ordinance that's introduced. The issues that you brought up, and again, they're having to do with the setback for the garage. Right now, it's a minimum of 3 feet. That does create the potential where a driveway is 6 or 7 or 8 feet, and so somebody feels like they can start to park in there when they're really
hanging
out.
They feel like they will park.
And so what we've done in other projects is create an area in there. You're either less than 5 feet or you're at least 18 feet, so
right.
You don't have that in between.
Yeah.
And so if you'd like to add that stip, we could, but we also have to go back through the design review process where we'll have an opportunity to.
Now, the other question I have is, I know there's a design review process, but I'm not wholly comfortable approving a zoning and going forward without knowing exactly on a project like this, without knowing what the design components are going to be. Especially this one, where actually the back of the house is the front of the house.
Correct.
From a streetscape standpoint. I'm a little underwhelmed by the pictures that I saw as far as the architecture. That I get it that that's the garage, but that's also when people drive down that, what they're going to see. And there's not a whole lot of variety or components. There's a lot of blank walls without architecture thing. How do I feel comfortable that that's going to be taken care of before we approve this concept? And I didn't see a whole lot of very, very details on the landscaping in front, how that walkway is going to be in front of the house, and those kind of things. I know that normally that's taken up as part of the technical nature of this, but if we're going to allow that kind of development, I think there needs to be some kind of a surety and some kind of more specificity on what's going to happen before we give the before the plat. They seem like those need to be more joined together.
Okay. Mayor, the couple of responses I can have for that is, one, in the development agreement that was approved with this previously, when this case went through back in 2008, one of the conditions there is that the owner will need to continue the architectural development of the new product to meet the requirements of this section and provide high quality of buildings and landscape design. So that will be one of the requirements. And then also it's stipped for actual design review board approval of their products as opposed to just staff. So we'll have that opportunity to address those quality issues. We agree that what they've provided at this point is fairly minimal, and we'll be working with them to raise the bar.
Okay. Because this is a unique, whenever you go this high density, this is a unique kind of process, and it's not your normal 50, 60 wide lot. The architecture and the landscaping are integral to how the entire feel of the project is. And if you miss on one of those, the entire thing misses. So if that's going through a development agreement, and what you're telling me, we're going to have to trust the staff to make sure that those, when you say high quality, it's not only high quality, but it's very specific to this type of higher density development where you got to make sure you're hitting on all cylinders.
Correct, Mayor. It's the staff and the design review board will be have that responsibility for actually approving this product as opposed to staff.
I'm going to trust then that you will make sure that happens.
Yes, sir.
All right. July, yeah.
On that same issue, I know they're modifying slightly the density of the residential component, but is that changing any of the commercial hospitality component of this process?
No.
Same acreage, it's just a modification of that.
Mayor, Councilman Summers, all that is the same.
Okay, thank you.
Parking adequate on that? How wide are those? I'm assuming we're not having any parking between, I know this is a technical issue, but on the other hand, it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of off-street parking because there are no streets, it's basically all alleyways.
Mayor, they've provided parking areas distributed around the site at various ends of the blocks.
Okay, and you feel comfortable that there's adequate there? Okay. All right, July 8th, regular council meeting. Page 2, items 3A and 4A. Items 4B through 4D. Items 4E and 4F. Items 4G and 4H. Items 4I through 5B. Items 5C through 5I.
Mayor.
Mr. Brady.
Just when this item comes back on the 8th, we'll be combining
which item?
5F and 5G. There'll be one resolution for the two items. I think that's what we figured that's more efficient. We just so it won't look like it's missing. It's just easier to do those in one resolution. So.
Okay. Items 6A through 6C. Items 6D through 6G. God, I think this is a record for zoning cases. Last 5 years.
Coming back.
And items 6H through 8A. And then, of course, we'll also have item 6A from the July 1st that'll be included here, right?
Yes.
And that was... multi-unit dwelling water services. Okay. All right. Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on proposed future capital improvement program. Mr. Brady.
So, Mayor, we've provided council a listing attached to this item of the proposed bond projects. They're grouped by the different categories by which they would be identified on the ballot. So as it would be proposed as of the projects we've talked about today, under the streets category question, there would be $27 million set aside for street reconstructions. Then it'd be $29 million for what we refer to as economic development projects. There's a list of types that cities share, the Fiesta District, Phase 2, Gateway Airport, beginning to do some of the design environmental projects there. Neighborhood and safety is another category of $22.8 million. We've identified projects such as the Mesa Drive Phase 2, right-of-way improvements, including First Avenue, 10th Street as a multimodal project. We've talked about improving, continuing our replacement of rusted street lights as well as street light improvements. That total for streets would be $79.1 million as proposed today. Under public safety projects, we've identified communications, and I think it looks like we put the Fire Communications Center under Fire and Medical, but it probably would move up into that this category today where we have it called $6.4 million. I think that we'd move the $16 million from the Fire Communications Center up into that category, so we'd have a $22.4 million category under communications. The police grouping would remain the same at 7.8. And then we would have fire and medical. That would just include, let me go back to police. Police would include the helicopter replacement, the hangar remodeling, an additional evidence freezer, improvements to the holding facility, as well as security hardening around the shooting range. Under fire and medical, we would include then fire apparatus replacement program, fire station 203. This would be the building construction and also improvements to the public safety training facility burn room. So the public safety category would then be for a total of $51.7 million. The third category that we discussed last week, and I think the council should have all received some additional backup information, is that Cactus League Museum has requested that that an item be placed on the ballot. They would request the item for the Spring Training Museum be placed on the ballot, and that would be at this time at $17 million, 17.1 for the cost of selling the bond. So for a total of all three, now each one of them would be standalone and would be voted on separately, the three. But the total package, combining all three, I believe that totals $147.9 million. So those are the projects that have been identified, and if seeking council direction to this is what we'd like to move forward, we would present those items, those three questions, and a resolution to call the election. We would do that for a week from tonight and present that to you. My one request I think that would be helpful for us to have before the 8th for our planning purposes in the budget, as we do for all our capital improvement projects, is to begin identifying the operational costs for all these projects as they come online. What would be the operational impacts to the city, if any? Many of these don't, usually the street projects, or if we're replacing apparatus that's already in the replacement program, they wouldn't necessarily. But we would want to know the operational impacts so we can begin anticipating and planning those in our forecast.
Thank you. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the recommendations, and I agree with what we have presented here. But I also agree with what Mr. Brady indicated about the further refinement of operations costs. I think the more detail we can get and be working on that, it will be important. I think that's particularly important for the Fire Communications Center and the Spring Training Museum, which are major projects. But we want to really understand what the operational costs will be, how they'll be phased in, things like that. So I think that would be helpful. And I only had one question, and maybe it's not here or maybe somewhere else. Was there some other way you're addressing the VHF radio support needs, other than in this particular package?
Thank you, Councilmember Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh. I believe in one of the original list, we had identified an amount of about $1.8 million. I think after further discussion, that may be a fairly more robust than what's actually needed. That was really replicating what's being done in Phoenix. My understanding, there's a number that's much less than that, that's closer to $400,000. I think what we would do, I think because of that, most of that is technology-based. It's not really capital infrastructure. I think we'd want to work maybe with the
You can handle it.
Fire medical look at if there's a way in the next year or two. I mean, again, even if this were in a bond program, it wouldn't be something that would come forward next year. It'd be over a 2 or 3 year period. What I hope is maybe over the next year or two, maybe we can work with the fire department and through grants or other things, try to find funds within the general fund, maybe savings in the fire department or something, so we can make that a priority within their budget to fund,
right,
as opposed to making it part of a bond program.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Councilor Higgins.
Are we having a presentation from the chief on the communication center? Were we doing that today?
If you have questions.
Okay. I thought there was something formal.
We could. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
if there's, I think we were kind of waiting
just
for
so you
specific
know
questions.
The server just went down, just so both of us have no servers. So, but I guess I have a question. Like we talked the other study session the other day, they discussed what their plan was. I heard Councilmember Kavanaugh talk about a little bit about, and Councilmember, Vice Mayor Fincher about. You know,
Chiefs, why don't you come up?
So I just wondered what I didn't hear. It was the discussion of, I don't want to call it like a virtual communication center where, you know, the networking and all the cabling and everything you need to go live with the communication center is somewhere in the city. You know, I just throw out, you know, we have backup the EEOC at ASU Polytechnic campus for the state is in the city of Mesa already. You know, so we have like assets we could possibly use. If we were trying to get far away from downtown Mesa for a backup center, East Mesa, the library, the multi-gen center, all large brick and mortar that, you know, if we brought the right cabling or whatever y'all need to bring in some, hardware and set up, you know, as opposed to building a, my paper went away, so was it whatever
Mayor,
millions of dollars. Thanks.
Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins.
Okay.
Thanks for the question. I think the short answer would be that any facility or any location that could support the operational needs that we have for both redundancy and backup for a really basic dispatch service that the city provides not only within the city but from the fire medical perspective within the region would be, as long as it's functional, we want to make the best decision, not only for the expenses, but also for the community in terms of what the location should be. But that is yet to be determined, as it would be with a fire station or any other construction site.
But what I didn't hear talk of was, you know, we talked about different type of, you know, a brick and mortar ground up. My fellow council members discussed, you know, redoing a big, what's it called, big box. But what I didn't hear is I'm calling it virtual, but that might not be the right word, but you know, maybe Mr. Deschuk can help me with whatever. But you know what I'm trying to say,
Councilwoman Higgins, and I think the chief and I talked about this a little bit. I think what we were trying to emphasize, the point here is the operation, the purpose, mm-hmm. the function of what we're trying mm-hmm. to accomplish. And I think we want to have the flexibility, Chief. Is that correct? That to look and see how we can provide that the technology, the functionality, wherever it might be, and not necessarily focus on that it necessarily needs to be, and it could be, a building, or could it be that we could put the consoles and bring the network systems and the equipment either to an existing building we have, I'm not sure if we have something like that, or facilities or an area where we already own land, for example, the area around the public safety academies. We still think we want to kind of explore those options. Is that correct, Chief?
Yeah, that's correct. Probably the main reason at this point is, number one, we're really looking for a facility that would be on a separate power grid from our current communications facility. Mm-hmm. So in the event that we would have a power outage, we would have a better chance of both facilities not going down at the same time. The other advantage is, in most communities, they talk about having a backup center. Usually that's a dark center that's just sitting there waiting until something happens to see if we need to use it. The plan that we're proposing would actually bring up two fully operational facilities that are underway at the same time. So the maintenance of those facilities, the inner workings of those facilities, as there would be updates made to processes and systems, would be part and parcel to the daily operation. So this, it would be a seamless transfer to the backup facility that we would be talking about, because essentially we would have two frontline facilities, each would have the ability to be the backup for the other. So I think that that's a key part. In terms of location, obviously, wherever there's infrastructure available to supply the communication needs that we would have for the facility would be a reduction in cost in terms of bringing that utility on site. There are several locations in the city. As the city manager mentioned, our training facility is just in the process of getting fiber brought into that location right now. And once you get one feed in there, the capacity is such that it could handle most of what we want. But it's also in a good location in terms of where it is in Mesa, that it would be a good and easy microwave shot. I'm certainly not a technician, but there are multiple infrastructure systems that go into making one of these centers redundant. And so there's a lot of different locations that we could look at to accomplish that.
So, Wardley, are we looking for a backup communication center, or it sounds like you're looking for an additional communication center? Is what I heard you just say. That's live all the time.
Well, we're looking for a live center that functions also as a backup, and that would also allow our current facility to function the same way. So that's a facility redundancy that's very standard. In fact, it's basic in municipalities the size of Mesa, not to mention sort of the regional arrangement that we have for fire and medical, which serves over 1 million people. We currently do not have that sort of dependability, redundancy, and backup capability. What we've experienced recently with some of the difficulties with the current facility is that we have had to really use Band-Aids and really search various systems to come together, whether it be here or other areas within the valley, to get us through a situation that we've even planned in advance for. Even with that, the capacity and the capability provided during that with that approach cuts our functionality by at least 40% to 50%. I mean, we don't have the capacity for 911 calls. We don't have the capacity and ability to do the dispatches, and certainly not the data centers to send the data out to the mobile computers for different dispatch functions as well. So we're really in a position that we're really at a critical place where we need to begin to develop the capacity for that. Typically, the strategy that we're talking about having two facilities on different power grids would not only provide for the backup, but also provide for the redundancy.
So are we looking at, like, putting police in one center and fire in another, or are we looking at a little police and fire or little units? What are you thinking?
Well, the concept right now is it would be police in one center and fire in the other center. It could be any combination. Again, what we're looking for is the functionality of having the dependability that backup and redundancy brings to the table, plus an added feature that would be some flexibility. As you know, Fire and Medical is exploring a lot of different ways of deployment, where we've moved from the one-size-fits-all to the much more efficient TRV program. It's very difficult right now operating within the same architecture to be able to accomplish both at the same time, not to mention access to data that we need to be more flexible and be able to make adaptive deployment decisions on the fly. Again, to maximize our resources, reduce costs, and not only maintain, but actually improve service levels.
Thank you. Thanks.
So to summarize, if I hear you right, when we say communications center, we're not talking about a building as much as we're talking about a process.
That's correct,
or a function is a better word, a function.
That's correct, Mayor.
Which might take place in whatever we can find is the best and most efficient and effective way to do it. Could be an existing building, could be a reuse of a building or a repurposing of a building, it could be a new building. You're asking us to include this ability that regardless of where this goes, to have the bonding capacity to finance that regardless of what physical location it might be in.
Correct.
We can decide then when you do that detailed study to figure out exactly how that's going to work, how much of this bonding capacity will be needed, and where we will where we'll actually apply that. Is that a good summary?
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a very interesting and yet complex issue when you deal with communications. And it seems as simple as having an iPhone. I've been tasked by the National League of Cities to represent that entity on both the SAFECOM, which deals with the interoperability of communications, for public safety and FirstNet. And FirstNet is tasked with putting together the nation's first nationwide public safety broadband network. It's essentially data communications for public safety. And I had the privilege of providing an update on that process to NLC, to the Information Technology Committee of NLC, also the Public Safety Committee, and afterwards in a acronym-rich environment, which I would have paid about $30,000 to the mayor's fund had I been there. And I actually tried to simplify it. The lead-off question for this was as simple as, what is LTE? And not knowing what LTE tells you that if you have an information technology group of policymakers wondering what LTE stands for, this is a complex issue. What comes out of it is that the nature of communications and public safety is going to change immeasurably over the course of the next decade. The FirstNet will be putting together a broadband communication network that will not only deal with the voice communications, the telephones, the radios, the VHF, and limited data capabilities that we have now and we're currently utilizing. It will change the world for communications, the ability to have real-time GIS, to have real-time data transmitted from the scene to the data center to the EOC that Councilwoman Higgins mentioned, and have incident managers be able to give real-time feedback to uplink with the Weather Service and other critical entities. And you think about the tragedy that hit us here just last night. One of the possibilities of utilizing these systems is in protecting our firefighters, because it will link to weather, it'll link to other entities, it will project where fire is going and be able to move resources in a way that protects communities but also protects firefighters. And the police department, the opportunities that they're going to have are going to far exceed that. We have to have the capacity to integrate this new technology into our communications center, and that's what this bond really represents, is the ability to adapt to something we know is coming. This isn't what might happen. This is what's going to happen. We see that infrastructure being developed, so this is an investment in protecting our community and also being able to fully integrate those new technologies that will be moved forward. That said, I do have one question for you. There's a huge discrepancy. The VHF radio system is different than the LTE, so there's a difference right now between voice communication and this data communication that's going to take place, and that will continue for the foreseeable future. So we're going to need to continue to invest in our land mobile radio, our VHF side. There's a big discrepancy in the numbers between 400,000 and 1.8 million, and I just want to make certain that we're going to have the capacity to make those investments in the mobile radio system. So where are we in the spectrum of 400,000 to 1.8 million? Are we going to be able to find that money in the short term to invest in the system? Because I know we need to get it active soon.
Well,
that was a long question. I apologize. But.
Councilmember Summers and Mayor, the transition to long-term evolutionary data transfer on a national level has been underway probably 3 years now. I also sit on a steering committee at the state level for public safety, similar to the council member, only not in Washington, D.C., locally. Clearly, this is a transition that's going to evolve over several years. I think that 10 years is ambitious. If everything works just right, it could be. But it's something that we're going to be dealing with as public safety. As you may recall, this ability for data is really exclusively for public safety. The FCC dedicated the frequencies just for public safety to do this. So we will, as a community, have an opportunity in the future to transition to the ability to take advantage of this national network. At this point, it doesn't appear that there would be a requirement for such a thing, but surely would be to our advantage, especially from a law enforcement perspective, where you're looking at the ability to evaluate a person's criminal history on a national level from a mobile position rather than from a desktop somewhere. So clearly we would want to develop the ability to do that as we do the construction. I'm not sure to what extent in terms of our ability to do this center, there would even be the technology available that would allow us to put it in place. But
I apologize for confusing the two issues, because we can't put that in place because we don't know what the network architecture or the protocols are going to be. But we still have to consider we could still narrow that down to what the possibilities for that infrastructure and the protocols are in limiting our site selection to areas that are going to be able to support the broadest possible application of that broadband technology. But more to the point, it's the radio, the VHF radio system will still be an integral part of this at least for the next 10 years, and we need to continue to make investments in that. We were talking about bonding $1.8 million for it, but we need that in the shorter term that perhaps the bond would account for. But my concern is the range between $400,000 and $1.8 is a wide swing. And I want to make certain that the number that we're comfortable with, we're going to be able to absorb that either through you pay for it out of the general fund or a combination of general fund and other sources, that we're ready for that, because that's critical voice communication that our firefighters and police officers and others are going to need to operate today. So, I mean, where are we on that? Why is it such a wide swing? Have we been able to refine that number? More specifically, the 400,000, or is this it's somewhere in this large range? We're not sure.
Councilmember Summers. Basically, the difference in there, the original amount that was given to us was approximately 550,000 to 600,000 to upgrade our current VHF. During that time, someone did come up with the number 400,000. I'm not sure what that's based on or where that came from, but the 1.8 million, the difference between the two prices, the 550 and the 1.8, has to do with user identification. Basically, on the lower scale, the 550 to 600,000, what you're talking with that is if a firefighter keys the radio, dispatch will know that there's a firefighter there, and they'll be able to hear them and talk with them. On the 1.8 million model, basically, if a firefighter keys the radio, dispatch will know who that firefighter is. So that's the difference between the two levels on this.
Well, I know Phoenix is implementing that system of individual radio identification. So the question is, if we choose not to do that here, do those systems still interoperable?
The radio frequencies and stuff will be interoperable, but they will not be able to identify our users on this system.
But they will be able to see it's engine 201?
No. All they would know is the VHF radio is being transmitted.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any more questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Spring Training Museum. Were we going to have some kind of
a... Oh, I didn't know it was a closing for a question.
And is that how it's going to show up? Because is that the best identifier, really, what it is?
I'm open to any other...
I mean, judging from the the description and the media reports, and also I think what we got, I think there was something that was broader than the Cactus League experience that was envisioned there, expanding the programs and everything in there. I think that maybe just calling it a spring training museum is somewhat limiting. And I don't know, unless they're missing something.
I'm kind of using what I was given. So there's the Cactus League experience. But that, I don't know if that helps describe. Oh, are they here? Yeah,
that's why I was waiting for them to say, Robert or Lisa or someone, come on up and let's talk about this.
Yeah, and you know, at some point, even what's on the ballot, what we put here is one thing, but the ballot will be pretty restrictive in the words we can use, too.
Which is why I want to go over it a little bit right now to make sure that what we're talking about, and we're talking about a lot of money here, and thank you, Lisa, for coming up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Explain just very briefly what you envision this facility accomplishing.
Well, it's more than a museum, as you stated, Mr. Mayor. It would be a place to springboard development for the Riverview area and also tourism development in the city. We envision it being a portion of it being dedicated to spring training history, Cactus League history, but there would be a number of other activities that would involve a broad range of partners throughout the community that would fall in different sectors, some tourism, some other areas of community development. And so I've outlined a few of those in the proposal for you that we foresee that we could develop.
So this is an outgrowth of the Cactus League experience, which was never, and the reason why I'm going to pre-spring training, I've never heard this identified as a spring training museum. It was a Cactus League experience.
Yeah.
It was a display. It was always about an interactive type of experience that introduced not only to Cactus League, but to baseball in general. And based on what you submitted to us, as I understood it, maybe I understood it wrong, that was to be the basis of this, and the basic, because that's what we have. We have that experience. We've had that. We have those collections, but they go beyond just spring training, and it seems like that's a nice foundation to work from to create other types of experiences that all fit in with the baseball, the winter visitor, the spring, that type of experience.
That's exactly right. This goes along with our philosophy at the Mesa Historical Museum of utilizing our heritage resources for beyond just exhibitions, but the exhibition that we've developed over the last 6 years for this Cactus League project will be, the foundation for the museum. We have a large collection, so utilizing the resources that we have in the collection and that we have in terms of programming beyond just exhibition will be vital to the success of the project, but certainly the core will be the collection and the experience that we can bring in bringing the Cactus League to life. And certainly the name is definitely something we'd like to work with the city on, but I will say that we specifically focused on the word spring training instead of Cactus League because we found out over the last several years as we have developed this project and have tested it in different markets around the valley that people know they're here for spring training, but they don't necessarily identify strongly with the Cactus League. So as you know it's been play ball, the Cactus League experience, but now we've been using this term, the Arizona spring training experience at museum, both purposely using the words Arizona to make it broad to make sure that we understand this is bringing all of Arizona baseball history into Mesa, into one place, and then the word experience because it's not just an exhibition at the point that we want to take it.
I appreciate that because, I guess my purpose is if we're going to give you a chance to go sell this community, I want whatever we approve, whatever's on the ballot, to be the most descriptive as far as not only what we're doing but what we hope to accomplish by this.
Yes.
I don't want to be we've learned in the past that when we didn't pay very, very close attention to how we worded things on ballots, that the elections did not turn out like I think they would have had we been more careful in how we looked at it and what we approved. So I just want to make sure we're there. Mr. Richens.
I appreciated reading in the proposal the correlation between a museum that's been done in another location in the country in Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Reds Museum. And over last week, I had an opportunity to visit with a friend of mine from Cincinnati who's attended that museum and was familiar with how it worked. And he went on and on about its success and its business model and how it worked and how many times he had been there to visit it and kind of its place in the community. And, I'm really hoping to see that this can kind of achieve the same thing. Hopefully it can be somewhere near the new spring training venue for the Cubs, because I think there's a lot of energy that could be built there, in the vision of Wrigleyville. So, it's something that as I've gone through it and talked to different people, I think it's something that we could really make successful here in Mesa, and I'm looking forward to at least put it before the voters and hear back from them if they agree that this is a good opportunity. So there'd be a lot of work involved in running campaigns for all of our bond questions. We've gone to the ballot box quite a bit for this kind of thing over the last 5 years.
that I think the public has shown its trust, and I, for one, wouldn't want to violate that trust, but I think that this is an opportunity worthy of discussion.
Okay. Any other questions? I think I have a lot of questions because I think so far what we've gotten, this is unique, and this is not normally how these things come about. This was somewhat of a late entry from, frankly, a non-city agency, although we are connected at the hip with the Historical Society. We have been the major funders of the Cactus League or spring training or whatever, and number two doesn't even come close. And we've been willing to do that because it's been a positive thing for us. You know, this is a big step. Mm-hmm. And I guess my feelings are, and I think Councilmember Richin sort of said it, if this were a city function, I'd be thinking very, very carefully about it. But based on where it came from, the group that it came from, you know, I'm willing to let you have your swing, okay?
Nice.
And see, because I think it's important enough for the community, and you've done a lot of work on it, and I think it's important, and I would support it, putting it before the voters to see what they think about it. I don't know that this is something, if we went through a normal deal, maybe we wouldn't come up with this. Maybe this would, because we now start getting into priorities and not priorities, and that's a little unfair in this situation, because we don't look at this as, do we do this versus that? I think this is in response to the fact that we believe this is a valuable asset that we've created and that we can build even bigger. And, you know, I'm willing to let you and the group really have a shot at selling that to the community and seeing if that's the way to go. The questions I have we can't answer today, but I think we'll answer as we go forward. I think that there needs to, my personal opinion is if we're to move forward, it needs to be a joint, really a partnership. And I think the participation from the community, from those who love baseball, is essential. What that level is, I think we need to determine. It needs to be, I think, significant enough that it shows a real public-private partnership. Mm-hmm. I think there are questions on operations going forward and what the expectations are for city. It's not like we have a whole lot of stuff floating around that we can throw into this. And I also think it's some area that I'd like to know more about what the historical societies and those involved with this have in mind as far as covering operations until this is really self-sufficient. We don't have to answer those today because, once again, I think by moving forward, this doesn't set it in stone. But it does put it up there so you can have a chance. I think it's important enough to give people a chance to at least say yay or nay on. That's my personal feelings on it.
I think you hit up some of the questions I was going to ask, but the public is going to want an answer to those questions before they vote yes on it. And so that's your time window is we can put things on the ballot, but you're going to have to answer those questions to the public. So.
And I think that comes in with a more specific plan, which I'm sure you will do, a more specific idea of how this public-private might work, to what level. You know, we have $17 million here. I don't have enough detail to know whether what that actually specifically gets us and how much that we should ask of those of you who are promoting this to really come in and be part of that. You know, is that $1? Is that $10 million? I'm sure it's probably somewhere between. I agree with Councilman Richens. That's something that you're going to have to bring out the details before we get to election time. You got a lot of time to do that. Okay. But I'd like to see what you come up with because we've been talking about this concept for a long time. You know, this was something which was envisioned. I know Robert Brenton talked about it a long time. We talked about how to fill out the our museum and our complete. We're the natural place for it, which is why the city has stepped up from day one to support this at levels unmatched by others. And would love to see if this can have a permanent place in Mesa.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other questions for Lisa? Okay. So if this does go in and does get approved, you got your work set up for you.
So Lisa, can you help us work on, because right now the document gave us, it's called the Arizona Spring Training Experience and Museum.
Yes.
And that might be, I just,
if
you know,
we're okay
I,
with that? Okay.
Well, by next week, let's just make sure, and Debbie, you have to tell us what we approve and what ends up on the ballot. I just want to make sure that we're clear.
Okay.
And we don't approve something next week.
We'll have that.
Yeah, that all of a sudden we go, darn, I wish we would have said this, because now we have to go on the ballots, this and this. And I want to give you guys every chance to succeed. And if you're going out there and you have a description or a title that somehow limits it, and like I said, we went through this last election where we had some titles on what should have been some lay-down questions, very, very mundane technical issues on city procedure, and frankly, we got a little, we didn't have the best example, and when people don't understand, they will vote no. If there's any confusion at all, they will vote no. That's how it works on these things, and I just want to make sure we're set up to where we can feel confident that based on the restrictions and limitations we have on our wording, that you feel comfortable with this. I don't really care what you call it. I just want you and everyone to say, okay, this is what we have.
Okay.
And go for it.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? And we can do that. Since it's a resolution, we can do that before next week.
Yeah, we'll put that in. It'll be in your packet.
Okay.
Thank
you. We talk about
this. Just getting the difference between an ordinance and a resolution. We're not submitting. We can go up to the last till we post it and with what we've got.
Right. Yeah, we can even talk about it.
Monday night.
Because it's a resolution.
Yeah, no, we'll put it on the. Okay. It'll be posted on the agenda, so we can.
Right. We can change it because it's a resolution. We can change it. Gotcha.
Put it on a whiteboard.
Okay.
Yeah, we can do that too.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. Any other questions? Comments? Speak now. I guess I can't ask you to forever hold your peace, but at least speak now. How about that? All right. Next item, appointments to boards and committees. This is not a totally complete list. This is filling, I think, the vast majority of openings that we have and reappointments that we have on our committees. There are still a few that are yet to be done, which we hope to get you either by next week or right after break. We have a motion to approve by Councilmember Kavanaugh, second Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Acknowledge receipts of minutes of boards and committees. Motion by Councilmember Glover, second by Councilmember Higgins. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Any reports?
Yeah,
we'll deal with it one more time. Yeah, okay. Mr. Brady.
Well, Mesa celebrated the 4th on Saturday. The rest of the world will do it this coming Thursday, so we won't be having a council study session on Thursday, so we'll see you next Monday.
Anyway, we can't. We'll see you next Monday. We can't go by without telling everybody thank you. Sertoma Club, Southwest Ambulance, all the other sponsors, a great night for festivities in a new location. Got generally positive comments back from the setup, so we appreciate everyone for being involved in the Celebration of Freedom, the 4th Celebration of Freedom. And we'll talk more about that later.
Hold on, Mayor. We have something.
Yeah, yes. I thought someone might bring up
your excellency now. we had the honor and the privilege to attend Mayor Smith's swearing in, or it wasn't really a swearing in, gavel passing for the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which makes Mayor Smith the first Arizona mayor ever to hold that position.
You.
At a very large national level. So we were very proud, and he also got to celebrate his 35th anniversary with his lovely wife, Kim, which was very delightful. And
yes, and you remember, we have a history in this council of my anniversary following. If you remember, well, the first year we were in session, our Monday night, we had a council meeting, and I talked about taking her out for a nice dinner, and we went to the restaurant. It was closed. That sort of describes my anniversaries, but this time we did not have that problem.
Nope.
It was delightful.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thank you. That very. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. It was very nice for you to be there. It was a little intimidating sitting up on the stand. I mean, I can handle all these big city mayors. That was easy. But looking down at the table and seeing council members and Chris Brady sitting there was...
We laugh at your jokes.
Well, that's why I asked you to come. Somebody had to.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We knew we were laughing at class.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
That last check bounced.
Oh, well, should have known.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Quick executives. You want to move it? We'll do it next week. Okay. All right. I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Glover, second from the Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. See you upstairs.